So our next case for argument is Phelan v. Village of Lyons. Mr. Flaxman.
May it please the Court. This is a qualified immunity appeal. There are two questions in qualified immunity. The first is, do the facts show that the defendant violated a clearly established, violated a constitutional right? The second is, was the right clearly established?
Now, Mr. Flaxman, why were Phelan's plates the same as the stolen motorcycle? Did they actually have the same plates?
No. Well, they had the same number. Motorcycle plates are small. Vehicle, automotive, car plates are big. Illinois, for whatever reason, assigns the same numbers to motorcycle plates as to car plates.
Oh,
seems absurd.
But we all know, or officers know, that a motorcycle plate, I think this officer admitted at his deposition that a motorcycle plate is small and that a car plate is big. And the question is, there's no dispute that the right involved here was clearly established. The question is, do the facts show that he violated a constitutional right? And the facts are that he had
the intersection of really stupid Illinois law with a small town police force.
I would use stupid.
Fatal intersection.
Well, I don't think it's the police force. I think we had a police officer who might have been well trained, but nobody told him to read the third line on the screen, which says, hey, it's a motorcycle.
And he didn't have to scroll down, right? I mean,
no.
I have the printout of the screen right here.
It was right there.
He looked down at the third line, probably would have hit the car in front of him, right?
He wasn't going that fast. And I don't think it was that close to the car in front of him. But that's what this question is. That's really a jury question. It's not a qualified immunity question.
Why a lawsuit, right? I mean, he apologized to her. There are no consequences. What's the big deal about it?
What damages is she seeking? Forgive me, but just as a follow-up.
Well, let me answer that question by pointing out.
Why don't you answer her question? She asked you what damages
is very stressful to be stopped and have people.
What damages is she seeking?
What damages for
the has she named a number?
No.
Well, $20,000, according to the complaint.
Yeah, I think our settlement demand was in that range. There's a case in Wyoming where a jury gave a woman in similar circumstances $150,000.
It's not an advertisement for trial by jury.
It's very stressful to be stopped and have guns pointed at you. I don't think that's happened to anybody on this court, just like I don't think anybody
is. Oh, wrongo.
All right. I don't think anybody in this court has been handcuffed in the back of a police car.
And, oh, wrongo again.
Well, I don't think more than one person in this panel has been.
Wrong again.
Well, I don't think anybody in this panel has kicked out a window on a police car.
Right, now you're getting there.
Right. People have been
killed. But I'll agree with you. It's a stressful situation.
And if she had pointed her cell phone at the officers, they might have killed her, thinking that it was a gun, and they would be entitled probably to qualified immunity for that.
But let me ask you this, Mr. Flaxman. The one thing about your case, maybe not the one thing, that troubles me is that this inexperienced young officer, Officer Dias, not only has the computer readout sitting in front of him, but he calls his dispatcher, and the dispatcher says, yes, 1020 is a stolen plate. And as I understand it, he doesn't tell the dispatcher I'm looking at a car. The dispatcher doesn't say anything to him about whether it's a car or a motorcycle. But as in the previous case, you know, isn't there some reason why the officer should be entitled to rely on what the dispatcher said, notwithstanding this screen in front of him says it's a motorcycle?
The dispatcher told him that it's still stolen. The Springfield says that plate number is still stolen. The dispatcher, we would argue to a jury, never gets a query from an officer who stopped a car when he's looking for a stolen motorcycle. So the dispatcher didn't ask the officer, it comes back. No, the officer didn't ask the dispatcher, see if it works on your computer the way it works on mine, or
Apparently, he just says ambiguously, you know, is 1020, you know, still stolen or
right.
something?
And then
right?
the dispatcher makes a query of the Springfield Police Department, and they say, yeah, it's still stolen. If in before we had computers and police cars, the officer would radio in and say, I've stopped the white Cadillac license plate number 1900, do a check on the plates. And then the would come back that, yeah, the white Cadillac 1900 is plates come back clear. He stopped the motorcycle, he'd say it's a motorcycle with plate number 1900. Here, he did ask the dispatcher to verify that a Cadillac was stolen.
So your theory has to be that despite the fact that the dispatcher says that 1020 is still, quote unquote, still stolen, that when right in front of the officer's nose is line three of the screen on his squad car that makes it very clear it's a black motorcycle, Honda, et cetera, that he really can't rely only on the dispatcher. That has to be your theory.
That's my theory. But that's my theory for the jury. It's not my theory on qualified immunity. Qualified mm-hmm. immunity is that we shouldn't be looking at whether it was negligent.
You didn't say in your statement of facts that he pointed a gun at her.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. You didn't say that in your statement of facts, nor did the district judge.
Well, I'm not going to tell you that you can't. If I didn't say it, I didn't say it. But that's I was responding to a question about guns being and about why this is a lawsuit rather than a.
Yeah, and you seem to have added to the facts.
Oh, it's in the deposition testimony, which I think is appended
but
to.
You say she's he ordered her to walk backwards.
Right.
So how would she know that a gun was pointed at her?
There were officers in front, I think.
Pointing guns at her, too?
Yes.
Why isn't that in your statement of facts?
At least it's not material to whether it's qualified immunity to stop her. That's, I wasn't asking the court to decide the merits of the case. I didn't ask for a reversal and on the denial of plaintiff's motion for summary judgment. I asked for a ruling on the qualified immunity question, which doesn't matter if they pointed guns at her. What matters is, were the rights clearly established, and do the facts show that he violated a constitutional right? And yes, those are the facts show, because he didn't read the third. The third line shows.
It would have mattered, in your view, if he'd simply stopped her car and asked her for her driver's license or something. That would still be illegal.
It would not be a lawsuit if that's what happened.
But in your view, it'd still violate the Fourth Amendment.
It would still violate the Fourth Amendment. But I don't think you're going to see that in cases that I come here with to argue about.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Flaxman. Mr. Rubery?
May it please the court, Patrick J. Rubery appearing on behalf of the defendant, Damian Dias. This is a simple case. Judge Maravich below concluded that there was a basis for awarding qualified immunity, and in so doing, he addressed basically the element concerning whether his conduct could be considered reasonable.
It seems to me impossible to see how we can say he shouldn't have looked at information right in front of his nose under the circumstances of this stop. And we are, of course, instructed under cases like Anderson against Crichton to evaluate all of these things in a very fact-specific environment, because this is not a stop that's triggered by some prior event like a bank robbery or something. He's driving around with nothing to do, and so he decides to run 1020 as a license plate, and then there's a fair amount of time after it comes back up on the screen, enough time for him to call the dispatcher, enough time for him to call for backup, enough time for him to do quite a few things. And the cases, it seems to me, that would give qualified immunity are all cases where information is not accessible to the officer. He's operating on the basis of, you know, a fast-moving situation, on the best information available. But here, right in front of his nose, is that it's a black motorcycle. Well, and how can we say officers get to just not pay any attention to the information in front of them, and then they still get to make a stop?
Well, he had two sources of information. One.
Well,
second,
and the more detailed source of information, given this inane Illinois system of issuing duplicative numbers, The best information he has, if he goes to line 3 on the screen, which I'm looking at, is something that helps him know, am I stopping the right vehicle? Are you saying that Officer Dias doesn't know how Illinois handles motorcycles and cars?
Not at all, Your Honor.
Know that, then he should know he better double-check a short number like that.
Did he say that he hadn't looked at the third line or that he was skeptical? Because, of course, with this dual numbering system and so on, you might think, well, it says motorcycle, but it could be the car because, after all, it's got the same number, right?
The testimony was he did not notice that third line.
He just didn't look at the third line.
He did not notice that, and it's important to remember that he's not sitting in an office looking at a computer screen with pop-ups coming up and drinking a cup of coffee.
He's driving the car, but it's not a high-speed chase. Well, again, I say he has plenty of time. He runs the plates, and the screen comes up before he decides to do anything.
Well, someone who...
He gets to line 2 where it's stolen, and immediately under the S of stolen is the K of black. I mean, you really... It's...
According to Officer Dias, it was Ms. Phelan's erratic driving that was a factor in his decision to make the stop. Did he ever claim that if he had read the third line of the printout and realized that her Cadillac was not the stolen vehicle, that he would have stopped her anyway?
The question was never asked at his deposition, and it was not dealt with as an affidavit. But, under that circumstance, I think there's probable cause. Is there probable cause for a felony stop where you bring in a neighboring department to provide backup? That's a different scenario.
That was a disputed issue of fact, so you're not arguing that right now.
Does the Leeds printout appear in its entirety on a screen in the squad car? In other words, how much is immediately visible to the officer? Is it all in there?
It comes off in a series of lines. This particular...
Does it keep moving? Or
you can page there. I think there were 4 to 5 pages with respect
but
to this 10-20.
But he didn't need to page to get to line 3.
He didn't page at all. There's no
line
testimony.
Line 3 shows up on the initial screen.
Line 9-3 should be on the initial screen, correct. I would just emphasize that this is in the midst of a vehicle pursuit. Is it a hot pursuit in terms of chasing a bank robber or a child molester? No, it's not. But nevertheless, the officer has to do several things. He has to keep track of the vehicle, maintain his distance, a proper distance between it and himself, and also not collide with rush hour traffic. And the fact that he did not notice this, and again, this is a series of acronyms. It is not a heads-up display that one would find in an Apache helicopter. Unfortunately, the village doesn't have that type of resources so that, literally it'd show up on the screen. I mean, some luxury cars have that now. When I say screen, I mean the windscreen of the vehicle or windshield. And he has to do all this. And while he's doing this, it's confirmed that it is, in fact, a stolen vehicle. And it's our contention that his conduct, while mistaken, was not unreasonable. And then that is the test. Contrary to what Mr. Flaxman is saying, we are not asking this court.
What did the dispatcher say about a stolen vehicle?
Confirmed that it was stolen. Stolen vehicle was a term used. There was nothing to the effect that
he didn't say motorcycle or car. He just said stolen.
Just said
vehicle.
License plate 1020 was listed as his stolen vehicle, but didn't specify.
That is a correct statement of what the testimony is. And that test, we can't look at just the screen. He's got to also consider the information he's gotten from the dispatcher. And the case law, as I've seen, especially the Eversole case, there a guy has the. The officer has the actual document in front of him, and he's not driving a car. He can study it for as long as he wants, and yet, nevertheless, he was awarded qualified immunity, even though he concluded that a date was wrong and it was out of sequence, and then arrested somebody for improperly purchasing codeine syrup within 24 hours. And under those circumstances, this court determined that qualified immunity would be applicable. And the Bibbert, which is a district court case, also stands for the proposition. There was information from someone saying, I am not the person you're looking for, and the dispatcher was wrong in that instance, and nevertheless the officers were awarded qualified immunity. And we think that that case law, as it existed then, applies to this case, because the information he had would, presented to a reasonable officer, allow him to conclude that a felony traffic stop should be conducted. And I think that we also have to look at, you know, what happened after he found out that there was a mistake. She was released immediately. If, in fact, she'd been hauled into the station for further investigation, I think Mr. Flaxman might have a case. But that just underscores the reasonableness of his behavior, as opposed to other cases that have been cited in the briefs where the officers did not act reasonably, where essentially they stood by and waited around and somebody was held for 2 hours. But she was held for less than 5 minutes and released with a profuse apology and even shown the documentation that caused the officer to stop her. So we think this case was properly decided by the district court, and would ask that it be affirmed in its entirety.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rubery. Mr. Flaxman, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
The request that the court say that the officer acted reasonably is not about qualified immunity. It's about the merits. And the defendant, just as I did not mention the guns, the defendant did not seek to affirm on the grounds that the officer had probable cause. The only grounds for affirmance is that it's qualified immunity. Whether the officer acted reasonably or not is a jury question. It's not the qualified immunity question. The interesting district court case...
I don't see what the difference is in a case like this.
Well, what if it was a warrant? And
a warrant.
Well, the interesting district.
In this case, what difference does it make?
The jury question, I believe, is was it reasonable for the officer not to read line 3? And if a jury says, sure, it was hot and he has a lot to do, then we lose. If a jury says, of course he should have read line 3, it was there. And for him saying, I'm sorry, I didn't read it, is not reasonable, then we should win. That's what this case should be about. In the district court case...
What probable cause was reviewed de novo? No?
It's a jury question. It's a question for the finder of fact. And that's not a qualified immunity question. If I could have 30 seconds...
I thought the qualified immunity question was the law well settled that this kind of conduct is unlawful. How is that...
You're conflating it or adding to it the subjective question of whether the officer acted reasonably on the facts that he believes, whether he acted reasonably in not reading line 3. The facts that would be...
There's no dispute over what happened, right? No dispute. He didn't read line 3. There are no facts in dispute. There are no facts in dispute. There are no legal principles, controversial legal principles or unsettled legal principles. So why doesn't the qualified immunity and the probable cause issue merge?
Well, I think because I recall Your Honor had posited that theory in other cases 10-15 years ago. I think Laguno had that theory that they merge and they should just be the same and it should be a jury question. We should consider qualified immunity. But I think the way the law has evolved, and sometimes I don't agree with the law either.
No, I agree. The Supreme Court has said there's a difference and there are cases where it makes a difference, but how does it make a difference in this case?
It makes a difference in this case, but the question whether it was reasonable not to read line 3 is the question for the jury. It's not the qualified immunity
question for the jury. I don't think so.
Well, in the district court case which the defendants cite, that Bibber case, I don't want to say that Judge Aspin is entitled to more weight than Your Honor's views, but that's exactly what he said about the dispatcher who did not read the third line or the rest of the description and just gave the officers, go out and arrest this guy. Judge Aspin said, well, the dispatcher didn't read the third line. I can't say as a matter of law that that was reasonable. Qualified immunity is denied for her, just like it should be denied here for the officer.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Flaxman and Mr. Rubery.